south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
You know, I get lots and lots of emails from listeners in Canada. They want to get the hell out of Dodge, in the worst way, perhaps twice as much as most Americans who've got half a brain. Wait a minute. Canadians are Americans, aren't they? Well, I mean, most U.S. citizens who got half a brain. Come to think of it, Central and South Americans are Americans too, right? So, we've got a problem with the rhetoric here. But we always have. Though, I gotta say, every Central and South American, even Mexican, refer to U.S. citizens as Americans, Americanos. Just like my favorite cup of coffee is Café Americano.
However that came about or got named, I'll never know.
What makes a cup of Café Americano, American coffee, something particularly American? Well, it doesn't. But I gotta say, when you go into a coffee shop and they've got an espresso machine, you know, one of those big expensive Italian jobs? I'm talking about both here in Latin America and in Europe. You've got to be kind of specific when ordering Café Americano, which, to anyone who knows his coffee, has to be prepared with a real espresso machine. In other words, it's just espresso with a lot of water, making it a full cup of coffee, not so intense and bitter as a regular espresso that you drink from one of those little demitasse cups. Yep, that's what they call those little cups, demitasse. You probably knew that already, but some of us dumb gringos who came down from Midwestern states like Illinois, our mothers never told us about Emily Post. Then again, I bet if you ask any Gen Xers, Yers, or Millennials, they never heard of or read Emily Post either. Anyway, you drink espresso out of demitasse cups, which is redundant because the tasse in the demitasse means cup. So a demitasse cup is a demi, which means half, cup, cup. You see, it's redundant. Half, cup, cup. Once again, if you weren't paying attention, tasse is the root word for taza, which means cup in Spanish. It means the same in old formal Latin, too. Anyway, if you're like me and you order Café Americano, that's plain black coffee, out of the espresso machine, and believe me, that's the only way to drink black coffee. Never out of one of those bun percolators that you see in every cafeteria and restaurant. Those things just keep reheating and regurgitating the same coffee all day long. Whereas coffee out of an espresso machine is completely different. They grind the beans right there and you're getting it absolutely fresh. And then hot steamed water is forced through it, extracting all the essence in one shot. I don't know why I'm telling you all this, because you probably don't like coffee. There are 5 or 6 people in the world who don't, you know. I'll tell you what, I've never met a homegrown Latin American who doesn't drink coffee. He might not actually like the taste of it, but he gets a boost from it in the morning like so many tens of millions of others. Speaking of coffee, here's a tip. If you go into a coffee shop and you want a pure cup of Café Americano, the way it's supposed to be brewed, and believe me, there is a huge difference. Again, that's just straight black coffee. You can put your own sugar and cream in it if you like. Oh, and some of us, like me, like it straight up. Nothing added. No milk, sugar, cream. Here's the tip. Make sure when you're in a coffee shop, when you order Café Americano, you say Café Americano in la máquina, out of the machine. Otherwise, you're likely to get that regurgitated percolator bun-type coffee. That always tastes kind of flat. You just might get that rot gut if you don't specify out of the machine. En la máquina. The easiest way to tell by looking, just check out if there's any foam on the top of the coffee when it arrives in front of you. If there is, it came out of the machine. If it's not, it just may have been reheated and regurgitated in one of those big-ass percolators all day long. Oh, and by the way, they always put the cheapest stuff in those big percolators. It's a way for restaurants and cafeterias to get off cheap, because it doesn't matter. If you put the good, expensive grounds in there, it still comes out tasting the same. Stale, flat, and regurgitated. Like campfire cowboy coffee in the old John Wayne movies. So when you get regular cafeteria coffee out of one of those percolator machines, you're always getting the cheapest brand of coffee. Then again, 80% of Americans are so used to that kind of rot-gut coffee. That'd be the Folgers, Butternut, and Hills Brothers crowd. That's all their moms had in the house since they were little kids, so that's all they know. And the fact that people can get so used to things that aren't great, it reminds me of that 3-stage triple canister water filter I have under my sink. Some of you guys have asked me for the plans for that. If you remember, it consists of a carbon black filter, a ceramic filter, and another carbon black filter. Oh, and the ceramic part of the filter is treated with colloidal silver. So as you might imagine, I've got a little spout for that water.
mounted near the sink. And so far, I've had a handful of Latinos and Latinas tell me my ultra-pure water tastes funny to them. Now, why do you think they'd come out and tell me that? Because it doesn't taste like the plastic impregnated bottled water they're all drinking. That's what they're used to. I've tasted their bottled water, and almost all of it tastes a little plasticized. And why wouldn't it? Seems like every Latino's car I get into, there's a bottle of water sitting in the center console getting baked by the sun. And at certain times of the day when you're driving around, you see water trucks delivering those garrafones, those 5-gallon plastic jugs of water to restaurants, bars, grocery stores, little tiendas, and homes. And what do they do if no one answers the door? They just put it out on the porch or in the back alley where the tropical sun bakes the hell out of it. I've been in Latin American cars where the bottled water sitting in the center console is so hot when you put your hand on it, you got to believe the plastic in contact is leaching right into the water. And that, believe it or not, doesn't seem to bother Latinos one little bit. Come on, tell the truth. How many times have you had a drink of water and it tastes like plastic? And when I try to explain it to the enlightened few, you know, the ones that I think are going to get it, they nod and say, yeah, I guess you're right, but they don't do anything about it. Next time you ride with them, it's the same damn thing. So I'm warning you, if you've been drinking bottled water out of plastic and you come to my house, my water just might taste funny to you. And sometimes, believe it or not, when I go to a coffee shop, I'll refuse the coffee because I can actually taste the plastic. Why wouldn't I? They're getting their water from those 5-gallon jugs that often sit in the sun all day too. But I digress as usual. We were talking about the huge increase in Canadians who are looking to get the hell out of Dodge. I get emails from those disgruntled and pissed off folks all the time, like this one, for example, from Mr. S. He says, hello, Johnny. My father and I have been listening to your show now for almost a year. Your show and the topics you cover are quite often what we end up talking about over the phone. Oh, and another thing, through you, I connected with Captain Mango back in October over a video call. It was great meeting him and talking about all things crypto. We also talked about the coffee plantation he's building with Lawyer Jose and all sorts of different things. I'm finally ready to start my plan B and work on getting out of Dodge. Let me tell you about myself. My name is Mr. S, and I'm a 27-year-old Canadian. These past few years have really opened my eyes to how much of a wreck my country is. Before the scamdemic, I saw some of the writing on the wall, but was too young and dumb to start taking any definitive action. The scamdemic was the kick in the ass I needed. In September of 2020, I started an online dental business and have been working hard to get that running smoothly so I can leave Canada behind. I believe all Western countries are doomed. Between tyrannical governments, the end of personal freedom, record high inflation, the woke agenda, and much, much more, which I know you are already full aware of. I see no way that the sinking ship will ever be saved. Our tyrannical leader, Justin Trudeau, has shown his true colors throughout the pandemic, but especially during the trucker convoy and how he treated us. He's made it clear that he is against me in multiple key pillars of my life. He is against small businesses, too, against crypto holders and those who don't buy the science, the bureaucratic version of science. Unfortunately, as a result of my stance and beliefs, I am a prisoner in my own country due to not taking any doses of the prescribed, quote, juice. All this just invigorates me even more to give Trudeau the middle finger and get out of Canada as soon as I can. My goal is to get a few residencies down in Central and South America and then give up my residency in Canada so I don't have to contribute my hard-earned money to any of the political agendas and corrupt evil politicians in Canada anymore. I'm planning on exploring El Salvador first and getting a residency there. I'm interested in what the president there is doing with Bitcoin as well as the cool things happening at Bitcoin Beach. Anyway, Johnny, as you've mentioned in your podcast numerous times, having a good lawyer is foundational and having success in Latin America. Then he says, what would be your recommendation for finding a lawyer or how to find a good, honest one? And Johnny, thanks for all the value and information you provide on your show. Cheers, Mr. S. Well, thanks for that, Mr. S, and I still don't understand why you keep voting in guys like Trudeau. Those maggots just keep getting elected over and over again. That's one of the reasons you're right, Mr. S. The ship is sinking. It can't be fixed, and the only answer is to go down with it or get the hell out of Dodge. Now, about finding a good lawyer in Latin America, one that'll work for you, I'd say the best thing to do is go back in the archives. I've talked about lawyers so many times, including how to find a good one. I don't recommend, by the way, going into a gringo expat bar and asking if someone's got a lawyer. They all have one, you know. Everyone in a gringo bar wants you to buy them a drink, so they'll have a suggestion for a lawyer or a plumber or an electrician. They're just loaded with information and anecdotes as long as you buy them a drink. But as far as lawyers, finding one that doesn't charge gringo prices, speaks English, and is connected, that's another thing. There are lots of lawyers, but lawyers who are connected, that's another thing altogether. For example, if you get yourself in a jam, and lots of gringos have done that, whether it's real estate or title problems, getting sued, hiring, firing, and employee problems, getting pulled over by the cops at midnight, residency stuff, landlord disputes, etc., etc. You really need a lawyer who's connected. That is, if he can't do whatever's necessary, he knows a guy who knows a guy who can. Though I'll tell you, it's a lot easier to find a lawyer who will work hard for you off the gringo tourist trail than on the trail. Because on the trail, most English-speaking Latino lawyers are jaded. That's not to say that they aren't honest and won't do a good job for you, but finding one that won't gouge you is much harder on the gringo tourist trail, where the gringo dollar is everywhere and has contaminated most locals, including lawyers. Here's another tip. On the gringo tourist trail, you'll see lawyers are always putting on the dog. They have to keep up with the status of their gringo clients. At least they think they have to. They think they need to do that to get respect from their clients so they look successful. That's why lawyers on the gringo tourist trail will be driving nice, big-ass SUVs. Oftentimes a BMW, even a sports car. They'll dress upscale, have expensive hobbies, send their kids to expensive helicopter schools, and they'll hop back and forth to the States, usually Miami with their wives, to do shopping a couple times a year. And they'll even subtly brag about it, bring it up in conversation that they're heading off to Miami next week. But you know, one thing they don't get, us gringos and expats are not at all impressed by that. Same thing with accountants, physicians, dentists, any professional. We don't care what they're driving or where they live as long as they do a great job. We don't care if they have a Rolex, wear designer clothes, or they hang out at the most expensive health club. In fact, for me, it makes a statement. It makes me kind of suspicious that they're charging way too much. But, you know, when on the tourist trail, they charge what the market will bear. They know gringos will pay. I guess it's inevitable, though. With professionals on the gringo tourist trail, with all those gringo clients, they try to keep up with the gringo style of living. And that costs gringo-style money, doesn't it? And where do you think that comes from? So I say beware of Latino lawyers with kids at expensive helicopter schools. Worse yet, if they're sending their kids off to college in the U.S. or Europe, that'll set a guy back 50 grand or more a year per kid because you're from out of state, out of country. That's usually double the normal tuition. Oh, and also beware of Latino lawyers who live in expensive high-end subdivisions and drive brand new, not used SUVs. And look out when their wives, kids, and or girlfriends have memberships at the most expensive health clubs. Oh, and about that SUV thing, a lot of people have SUVs these days, right? You buy a new one, it's going to cost you 50 grand or more generally. Whereas one that's a couple of years old, a used one, could cost half that or less. So you shouldn't really judge your lawyer by his SUV unless it's a brand new one that he changes every year or so. The tip here is you shouldn't get a Latino lawyer that's always putting on the dog, always trying to keep up with the gringo Joneses. A guy who's out to impress everyone that he's a high earner. Now, I know, there's some contradiction in that statement because here in Latin America, it is all about the show, all about looking a little bit richer than your neighbors. The fact is, Latinos with decent credit at the bank, just like gringos up in the States, put all their goodies on credit cards. So their plastic is all jacked up, but they haven't got any cash in the bank in case of emergency. Like so many millions of Americans, they're slaves to the monthly credit card payments. In fact, just 2 days ago, I was at a hospital in the laboratory waiting room. Maybe 15 or 20 seats there, mostly filled. Everyone's eyes on that big flat screen TV on the wall. People look at it to see if their number's being served. Well, it turns out where I was sitting, there were two ATM machines only about 8 feet away. People there would file up to it one by one. And they'd stop and dip into their purses or wallets right in front of me. Nosy guy that I am, I watched what they were doing. And the first three people up were middle-class ladies who pulled out, get this, the equivalent of $20 in the local funny money. Come on, 20 bucks. When's the last time you went to an ATM machine and pulled out just 20 bucks? It says a lot about the culture and the cost of living here in Latin America, doesn't it? Anyway, after the three ladies, the fourth guy, a distinguished-looking guy with a leather briefcase, looked like he was a lawyer or doctor or something, some kind of professional. Pulled a credit card, or maybe it was a debit card, who knows, out of his wallet, stuck it in, got rejected, insufficient funds. Put a second one in, got rejected. Put a third one in, got rejected. Oh, by the way, this guy had a keychain with a remote control on the key ring with a Mercedes-Benz logo on it. So we know what kind of car he was driving. Finally, credit card number 4 worked, but I did notice he must have had 12 credit cards in his hand. one of them a gold American Express. You got to wonder, how does that happen? That kind of stuff reminds me of the 80s and 90s back in Chicago, where it seemed like the more credit cards you had, the more important or connected to the world of commerce you felt, only to realize by the end of the 90s, the more credit cards you had, the more levels you descended in Dante's version of hell. But then there's that lag time thing here in Latin America we're always talking about. Latinos are way behind the curve on that one, probably 20 years. They still think the more credit cards or debit cards, the better. All that plastic in their wallet makes them feel important, makes them feel good. Connected to worldwide commerce. By the way, I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but Latin America runs on cash and debit cards, not credit cards. In fact, I'd say only about one in 20 cards in use out there are actual credit cards. Why? Because it takes a long time and a long history with a bank for them to start offering you a real credit card. Of course, when you first open a bank account, you get a debit card right away. But they won't issue a credit card unless you provide all kinds of documentation about your work, letters of reference, copies of other real credit cards, months and months of bank statements from other banks you've had accounts at, utility and rent bills, etc., etc., and most Latinos just can't provide that kind of stuff. The problem is, throughout Latin America, there really are no sophisticated and organized credit bureaus or credit scores. That's another lag time thing. Sure, it'll come, but it's not here yet. Though, admittedly, those things are a pain in the ass because they often get things wrong. And if your credit score ends up in the crapper by mistake, it's hell to correct. And even if it's fixed, it still sort of follows you around for life. But down here, that's not an issue yet. Though the banks and the loan companies share data. The real loan companies, not the loan sharks. They've got an ongoing list of deadbeats, but there is no really organized credit reporting system like there is up in the States. However, when you're with a bank for a couple of years and you come up clean, you haven't had any issues, no bounced checks or overdrafts. You'll start getting those credit card offers. The marketing designed, of course, to make you feel good. A gold star on your forehead. Like you finally hit the big time. You finally arrived. Yeah, you've arrived all right in that black hole of stress where you'll be continuously chasing your tail, likely forever. So again, getting an actual credit card, Visa, MasterCard, whatever, from a bank down here in Latin America is not that easy. Though gringos and expats have a much easier time getting one than the locals because we often have credit cards from banks up in the States that are in good standing. That greases the skids. But now you know why. There is a loan shark in every neighborhood. All right, let's take another email. This one from one of our many Daves. In fact, I think this email just might be from the original Dave, Dave number one. He says, "Hey, Johnny, in 2 weeks it'll be my 5-year Guatemalan anniversary, and I'm still struggling to learn Spanish. Partially because I stay here a year and then have to go back to the States for a year to deal with family issues and such, so I forget what I've learned. That's happened to me twice already. Thankfully, though, I've been back in Guatemala now since August, and I no longer have to go back to the States. I'm really trying to learn the language here so I can have some normal day-to-day conversations with people in town. I've figured out now what my problem really is, aside from being 54 and not having the absorbent sponge of a brain that I had in my youth. It's my hearing, Johnny. As a teen, I damaged my hearing due to loud music and have had tinnitus in both ears ever since. The older I got, the worse it got. For years, I've been saying, 'What?' when someone says something to me, and when I do actually hear them, it's only about half of what they said, and I have to piece it together. And that's when it's in English. Imagine me trying to decipher Spanish that way. For example, just last night, I was at this new jazz cafe here in Panajachel. Imagine that, a jazz cafe in Panajachel, Guatemala. All right, me, Johnny, just breaking in here for a second. You know, he's talking about Lake Atitlan, considered the first or second most beautiful lake in the world. He's talking about Panajachel, the first town you get to when you're coming from the main highway, the Pan American Highway. It's a little town about a mile high in the Altiplano that's got around 14 or 15,000 people. And because it's the first town you could drive to from the Pan American Highway, it's got the most tourists, too. Though it's in no way like a first world tourist town. Still, on weekends, you get a lot of day trippers because you can drive there with your car. Most of the other 12 or so little cities around the lake, you have to get to by boat. It's a fun ride, actually. But too big a stretch for simple day trippers. You might remember me telling you there are little lanchas or boats that go off about every half hour and circle the lake. You get on, you pay a buck or two, and they drop you off at the pier of whatever little town you want to go to. Oh, and by the way, the cool thing is if you have a house right on the lake, a lot of people do, you can have your own pier, and then that boat will stop at your personal pier and pick you up. There's really nothing like it. So anyway, Dave's talking about being in Panachel just last night at a jazz cafe, and he says the person on stage was speaking and singing in five different languages. He was a German by nationality. And when he did speak Spanish, I could actually hear what he was saying. That's because he was amplified. Then he says, it was right then and there I decided to find out about hearing aids in this country. I've been waiting for the, quote, personal sound amplification products, PSAPS, unquote, to come to the market since the U.S. made it legal for companies to manufacture such items direct to consumers for a fraction of the cost of real hearing aids. But I don't have the time to wait for that market to mature. I figure I'll go down the hearing aid rabbit hole route here in Guatemala so I can get to learning the language, and by the time I can hold a conversation, maybe I'll go back to the States and get a fancy set of earbuds that I can use to make calls, listen to podcasts, and use as hearing amplifiers, etc. Then he says, thanks, Johnny, and he signs it, the original Dave, otherwise known as Four-Toed Jones. P.S. It was actually 10 years ago, Johnny, yesterday, that I lost my pinky toe. Dave, I was wondering why you called yourself Four-Toed Jones. Now it's all making sense. You had me baffled for the longest time. I never asked. Anyway, then Dave comes in with another PS. He says, Johnny, do you have any leads on finding a good hearing aid doctor here? Dave, I'm glad you asked that question because you know what? I have the same problem, as do so many of us baby boomer and post-baby boomer types. And it's not only that we listen to loud rock and roll music, and was worse for me because I was on stage playing that music and getting blasted directly. I believe hearing loss started with the general public with the advent of headphones. Before about, I'd say, 1970, there were no good full-coverage headphones, the kind that encapsulated or covered your whole ear. And the company KOSS, K-O-S-S, came out with the very first ones that went viral, before went viral was even a term. Everyone I knew bought a pair of KOSS headphones. I think they were $35. That was big money back then. In today's dollars, maybe $100 or so. That was the first time non-musicians in their little adolescent lives were able to blast themselves into sonic oblivion. Us musicians, even us B-grade ones, were able to do that on a regular basis without the aid of earphones. By the way, I remember when I was graduating from engineering school, KOSS headphones had an announcement on the school bulletin board saying they were interviewing graduate engineers for design jobs. I didn't take the interview, though, because I didn't want to live in Milwaukee. That's where KOSS was. Anyway, Dave, I hear you, or more than likely, I don't hear you. I find myself saying what more and more times each day, too. And being that Spanish is my second language, I find it's doubly true when someone speaks to me in Spanish. I say, gay? No, not gay, K. That's what in Spanish, Q-U-E, K, or como? C-O-M-O, which translates to how's that? So, Dave, unfortunately, I'm heading down the same path that you are. Sooner or later, I'm going to end up with a hearing aid, too. But not yet. Not until the overwhelming majority of people around me say, Johnny, you deep for something? You need a damn hearing aid. So what are the first signs of going deep? Well, thankfully, it's little by little. Little by little, you start cranking up the TV volume when you're watching a movie, while everyone under 30 is saying it's too damn loud. And you know it's time for a hearing aid when the sound equipment you've got, even a TV, is cranked to 10 and that ain't enough. But as far as hearing aids, there have been some great breakthroughs. I was talking to an Expat Insider seminar attendee just a couple of months ago. He's had hearing aids since he was young and he says there have been huge improvements. So when and if my time comes, I'll be hitting him up for advice. And I'll be sure to pass it along because I know lots and lots of gringos and expats who are in the same boat. You heavy metal headbangers out there know who I'm talking about. It's funny, though, watching time go by, seeing 60, 70, even 80-year-old guys, bald-headed, saggy guys with hip replacements, still into heavy metal. In its heyday back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, who'd have thunk, huh? Aside from that, I'm glad today that Dave explained the origin of Four-Toed Jones. He lost a toe. I hope he somehow got reimbursed for that. You know, about 3, maybe 4 years ago, I told a story about a guy I met, an American surveyor, actually a retired surveyor. He retired very young at around, I'd say, 40 years old. He moved on to Latin America and wanted to live on the beach, where his wife wanted to live on the beach. She's Latina from up in the States, American born, and they came down to Latin America because they too see what's happening up in the States and they wanted to get the hell out of Dodge. And being that she's U.S.-born Latina and her parents were from Latin America, she speaks pretty good Spanish, and that's all in their favor. If a couple comes down and one or more of them speak Spanish, it really is a huge advantage when you first get down. Now, the reason why I'm bringing this up is because that guy, the American surveyor guy, he too lost a toe when he was young. I believe it was in an amusement park in New Jersey. He was on one of the rides, and it sheared his toe off. Ouch. But anyway, he got a pretty huge settlement out of it. If I remember correctly, he gets something like $3,500 a month for the rest of his life. And luckily, he said it hasn't hampered him from walking or doing a regular surveyor job, so he won kind of a backhanded lottery. But anyway, here's what I learned from that guy after sitting with him for a while. He said he's buying a beachfront property, but he would never buy a place that was under 50 foot in elevation from the local high tide line. Gringos and expats, he said, seem to forget that. They like living right on the ocean, and that's not a good idea, considering that in the last quarter century, there have been some fairly big ocean-bound earthquakes that have caused tsunamis. Fukushima, for one. I know I said this a while back, a couple years ago, but it's worth repeating. The biggest earthquake in human history was in Chile about 3,500 years ago. It caused a 5,000-mile-long, 50-foot-high tsunami. Now, of course, that's a very extreme case, a one-off, you might say. But more recently, a lot more recently, on May 22nd, 1960, it was Chile again, what they call the Great Chilean Earthquake, the second biggest earthquake in human history. It was 9.4 to 9.6 on the Richter scale and caused a 30-foot-high tsunami. Now, according to the surveyor guy I met, he said a 30-foot ground-level elevation from high tide would be plenty good, since there's only been one tsunami in human history that surpassed the 30-foot mark. But still, for his own peace of mind, and he knows land and water levels, he said he won't buy or build at a ground floor level that's lower than 50 feet from high tide. Let's consider 30 feet from high tide. That would be about ceiling level on the third story of a building. If a 30-foot tsunami rolled in like it did in Chile in 1960, that would mean about 70 to 80% of all the luxury beach houses in the world would be underwater, bowled over completely, likely demolished. So if you're into water and looking for a beach house, keep that in mind. And for all you guys and gals out there who have beach property with the ground floor less than 30 feet above the local high tide mark, the probability of being hit by a damaging tsunami in your lifetime is very small. But hey, you are rolling the dice. Just saying.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.